This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artists. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and maybe even to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Fran Healy from the band Travis. I'm Megan Aftermat, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, I think listeners are in for a really big treat with this episode.
Well, Travis just released their 10th album, LA Times, and I am aging myself automatically by saying that I was lucky enough when we were wee children to meet Fran Healy and the band back in 1999, around the time that they were releasing The Man Who, which was basically this volcanic hit of an album for this band. Fran is just not only a sublime songwriter, but also the sort of person that you would like to sit in a room with for about 10 hours and just talk to. I feel like this, in some ways, that this interview was almost too short. There was so much I didn't get to ask him, but because what he does is he sort of spins along as he answers your questions and sort of illuminates on certain things and speaks in glorious metaphor. I just think that the best thing to do is kind of sit back and enjoy this conversation with a really exceptional and interesting human being.
Let's do it. What are we going to start the session with?
He chose a couple of songs from the new album, plus a vintage favorite. So we're going to begin today with an acoustic solo version of Bus on FUV Live Sessions.
Staring at the ocean from a window on the hillside, a million boats are floating on the high tide. I wanna be a million miles from here, but I wanna know what everybody wants to know. Oh, won't you tell me what everybody wants to know? I thought it was just us waiting on this bus, waiting on a gust of wind to blow us away, away to better days, away to better days. Underneath the starry skies, I'm tired, you're wide, it's gonna be a bumpy ride. Just us waiting on this bus, waiting on a gust of wind to blow us away, away to better days, away to better days.
Day. I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and that is Travis's Fran Healy with a solo acoustic version of Bus in Studio A. Bus kicks off Travis's new album, LA Times, which arrives 25 years after the release of The Man Who, the band's second album that vaulted them into a stratosphere of fame that they didn't always necessarily desire. Since that, springboard frontman Fran Healy, bassist Doogie Payne, guitarist Andy Dunlop, and drummer Neil Primrose have released an additional 8 solo albums, including LA Times. And like the City of Angels, LA Times has a prickly eclectic edge and a cool, commanding confidence, but there is an undertow of darkness. Travis has always upended expectations of who and what they are as a band, and I am just thrilled to welcome the incredibly talented Fran Healy to FUV Live Sessions.
Wow, what an intro.
I am just ecstatic to finally talk to you again after 25 years.
That's
I think
a
that
long
was the
time.
Last time I interviewed you. It was a very, very, very long time ago. We were children.
Yeah.
We were wee little children.
Yeah, I know. It's funny you saying the thing you said about the band and being like hard to pigeonhole. I've met every band, almost every band in my travels. And I have to say that there is no band. I've not met a band like us yet. We're very song driven. The songs come out. You don't go in with an agenda. They just come out the way they come out, and you just record them the way they tell you they want to be recorded. So our output is very eclectic, and sometimes there's a little bit more cohesiveness in it on a certain record. You know,
this LA Times feels really
cohesive.
Really
think so?
Yeah, I do.
I think it's all over the place. I think it's like to me, it feels like a litter of puppies that all look different. They're puppies.
But that's Los Angeles.
But I guess so. I mean, oh God, let's talk about LA. I mean,
First of all, Bus, by way of its lyrics, seems to be an intersection of where you are personally, Fran. Mm-hmm. You're kind of mending. You're musing about life. Mm-hmm. You are considering what your next step might be. You are waiting on something. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you have stopped waiting on something. Where are you? I mean, I'm so intrigued by the lyrics of Bus, and I'm wondering what you were waiting for and what you might be waiting for now.
Well, the lyric to Bus came from a conversation I was having with Sandy Shaw, who is the original badass. She is so cool. And for those who don't know, Sandy Shaw was the first, you know, really amazing sort of pop girl singer. She would sing without her shoes on. That was her thing. She sung, I walk along the lonely streets you used to walk along with me. How can I forget you when there is always something? So that's Sandy. And she is the most effervescent person you can meet. Talking to Sandy, we met years ago and we became friends. And I was talking about the music industry and talking about how artists are always like, we're like little boats just floating on this big giant lake. All the artists. This huge lake, and there's thousands of little boats all waiting, all floating, waiting for this gust of wind that happens. You maybe get 2 or 3 a year that blow your boat for miles, but it's like God's breath, you know. And you see the big artists coming in with their kind of hired industrial fans to sort of artificially blow their boat, but it doesn't do it like when you get the real gust, you know, when you get the gust from above kind of thing. We had it, like, when it happened to us. And it's
With
The Man Who. Yeah. It's just, like, it defied expectation. So there was no way that record should have ever done well. Really, it shouldn't have, because you're coming off the back of Britpop with these slow-burning, quiet songs. But it just went bananas. And she's like, oh, that's I love that. You should go and write a song about that. So I put the phone down, went and started writing, and I was looking out of a window at the sea and seeing all these wee boats out the window. And the bus thing came into it, I think, because I waited on so many buses when I was little. I come from a very working class background. We didn't have a car, so we travelled on the bus. And if anyone who has waited on buses as much as me knows, you don't leave the bus stop. Don't think you can go to the next bus stop, because the four buses will go by at once type of thing. And in a sense, you know, as a metaphor for everything, for life, for it's about having patience. Wait for your bus is going to come. No matter what that bus is, it will come. Just wait and be patient.
You know, you spoke of a gust of wind before. You have made no bones about the fact that LA Times, you said this in an interview, is akin to getting pummeled by life, getting absolutely effing battered by the wind.
Mm-hmm.
You are a man who obviously has a very deft handle on metaphor, but is there an easy metaphor for what the last 5 years have been for you and how you have brought that into the writing of this album or some of the songs? Because I know that some of them have been pulled from earlier years too.
Before The Man Who came out, it's a good example. That record has something, absolutely has something going through it. It's got the songs are good, the songs are great, but it's also got this other thing going through it, and I think it's like it's a filter or whatever. And before we recorded that song, so much stuff was happening in my life. And as with life, you can't really, you know that John Lennon quote,
right,
it's what happens when you're busy making other plans. You can't, and this is why I love life, for good or for bad, for the times when you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe this is the best thing ever. But also embracing, and Dougie's mother, Rita, taught me this, embracing when really, really bad stuff happens. Before The Man Who, I lost my grandfather, and he was like my dad, and it was like watershed moment. I also had to sack our manager because it wasn't right. I began to actually see in my mind where we had to be and where we were going. It was weird. It was just like I was having these thoughts of, right, and in order to do that, they have to go, he has to go, he has to go, he has to come in, Dougie,
right,
who couldn't play the bass at the time. But I saw it. I was like, he has to be in this band because this band isn't, it's about friends. This is who we are. And all the people in the band, outside of the band at that point, were friends. So there was loads of changes. Then we moved to London. And before that, I got dumped as well. So there was mobs of stuff happening. Same as, and then of course, this record, The Man Who, is soaked in all of that. I don't know another way to say it, or it's seen through this kind of, or sung through this lens. This record is no different. It's been a mental 5 years,
yeah,
but very similar. And I think there's something that shimmers invisibly within the songs in a way I can't quite explain, but you know, it's, and you want a metaphor. I keep going back to the tea bag metaphor, where each individual little thing that happens in your life is like a tea bag, and you pour in the water, you get the cup of tea, and the cup of tea is this record, and it's kind of flavored by all this crazy stuff that's been happening.
Well, you sacked a manager for the before this album.
Yeah.
In addition, there's a beautiful song on this record called Alive, which is about Ringan Ledgewidge.
Oh, Ringan, yeah.
Yeah, who was your friend who you lost. You dedicate this album to him as well.
And to Dougie's dad, who passed away.
And to Dougie's dad as well. But, you know, with all of this, you bring in so much of yourself into what you're writing on this record. L.A. kind of becomes the river on which you have to float and deal and cope. And you have also said, like, L.A. is not fun to live in.
Mm-mm.
Do you see yourself getting out now?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I think, to me, L.A. is like... Everyone in New York and various other places kind of like go, LA type of thing. It's so hard to live in a city that doesn't have any central area of congregation, like where people get out on the street and they all bump off each other. It's very difficult to live in a city that doesn't have a public transport system that everyone uses, where you can, again, rehearse being a human being. And I have so many incidences in Los Angeles where, I mean, you talk to people and you throw your best, you know, funny, or you're just being dafter, and they're just like, they've not had enough rehearsal for life. That's one aspect of it. LA it's got all the ingredients to be like Babylon, like this utopia, because it has everything, and it has the weather, it has every creed and culture and pronoun you could, you know, it's like this, but they're all in separate little sectors, all in different zones, and everyone gets in their little pod and goes from zone to zone. It's like having the ingredients for the most delicious meal you could possibly have, and all the ingredients you can't get, they're all in bags. You can't put them together, you know, because...
And very different from Berlin, where you live for a spell. Very different, obviously, from Glasgow.
Very different from New York.
Yeah. And you feel almost, you know, you become insular when you're in that kind of environment.
Doing these interviews for this record, I think I've figured out what it needs. Hmm. You need to drop $1 trillion on Los Angeles. Kamala, someone, find it. Drop $1 trillion on Los Angeles. I mean it. And... sort out all of the homeless situation, which is ridiculous. It should just not be happening in this day and age where people cannot look after people who can't look after themselves. Sort that out. That's easy. I mean, you just take a little fingernail clipping of your yearly defense budget and that's fixed, right? So fix that. Then you put in a brilliant transport system. I don't know, you know, the like underground, whatever you, and you spend, it will take 50 years to do that. And then you'll have a city that is the greatest city in the world.
Where do you think you're going to land next? Do you think, you know, you have two New York songs on this new album. Do you see this city beckoning to
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. I love this city. This city, when I came to New York, I mean, Glasgow feels to me like New York's little brother or sister.
They're very similar. I agree. They are very similar.
They're sort of built around the same time, with the same kind of money, with the same kind of intention.
The same grit.
Yeah.
The grayness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, we were built on a river. We're a river city. The only difference is that New York's an island, and that's what sets it slightly apart from Glasgow, but everything else to me feels familiar. I think New York is the absolute, when I talk about a city that it's the melting pot, everyone's out in the street, rich, poor, everyone, and we're all bashing up. And that's why New Yorkers are some of the coolest people you'll ever meet, because they've rehearsed. You're bumping off of all these different people, you're talking to people. And so, yeah, my son, Clay, he just got into Cooper Union. He's taking a year out. He's coming here. So maybe I might follow him. I don't want to be a stalker. You know, that strange parent stalking your children.
Calling him, going, it's Sunday, you've not come over for dinner. What's happening? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where I'll end up. But I know that I've had... Ellie's been a really... it's been tough, but I kind of like tough, because it's life, you know, you experience as much as possible. I think harder stuff is more exciting in a way than just easy stuff.
You know, you survived a carjacking, you were badly bitten by a dog, you have seen terrible things, you've gone through an awful lot, Fran, in Los Angeles.
It was a sausage dog. It wasn't like a Rottweiler.
But still.
I was savaged by a
You were savaged by a tiny dog. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But Naked in New York, which you are doing today, which I was very excited when you came in and said, I've been working on this. I think I want to do this today. Mm-hmm. That I was surprised to hear that was a song that began evolving 27 years ago. What made it find its endpoint for this record?
So when a song first comes through, you'll get a little bit of it. I'm constantly going, please edit this. I had this thought the other day of, oh my God, I think I've got where songs are, where I get them, where they come from. And this is my new thing from about a week ago. When you're waking up and you have waking dreams, you know, when you start to have dreams, or when you're going to sleep and you have dreams and then you go into the deep sleep where there's no dreams, that little area is where the songs live. And I don't know about you, but if you've ever had a great dream, and then you've sort of slightly woken up out of it and you're like, oh man, that was brilliant. And then you try and go back to sleep again and get part two of that same dream. That's, to me, in the same way what you do with songwriting. So 27 years ago, I had that first little part of the dream came out, And it was like, I was like, oh God, that's something about that Shimmers. It's got this something about it. It's got a pulse. And then you put it on the shelf of your head and you come back to it every 6 months or whatever, you know, every now and then, periodically you come back and you try and like knock through into the next antechamber of the song, or like to the next verse or the chorus or whatever it's going to lead you. And I couldn't do it. It just would not allow me to get beyond that first line of the song until we were in the studio this time. And I have not stopped trying to write this song, but every time I've come back, it's, you check the pulse, and it's got the heartbeat, it's got everything. You're like, it's got the DNA of the song is in that first little bit. And you have to go back into that little zone to find the next bit of it. And I don't know whether it was the pressure of being in the studio. Dougie had said, oh, that song, you really should do that. And I'm like, but it's not, I haven't finished it. And then he's like, just try and finish it. And maybe it was the pressure of that, but I managed to find it and I managed to finish it. And the funny thing about it is that 10 minutes later, or immediately as soon as I'd finished it, the producer is like, right, we record it now and record it live. So it's not, there's no overdubbing on it. It's just exactly what I did just now. It's just another version of that. We did 8 versions and I blew 6 of them just at the end. I got the chord wrong because I've literally just finished it and I'm still learning it. But then I think the second or third take was the one. So it took me 27 years to write a song and 3 minutes to record it. And that's what I love about recording and music and songs and all that. You know, there is no time really to speak of when you're sitting, you know, we're still singing songs that are hundreds of years old. And they're just as fresh as they were when they were written.
Kara Manning with Fran Healy of Travis for FUV Live Sessions. And this is that incredible song. This is Naked in New York City.
Coming home.
From Travis's new album, L.A. Times, that is Naked in New York City, a solo version by frontman Fran Healy, who is here today on FUV Live Sessions. I'm Kara Manning. There's another New York song on here as well, which I just was so intrigued by because I remember the Black and White Bar.
Raise the bar.
Yeah. And I remember that. It was on East 10th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then it closed during the pandemic. It did mm-hmm. not survive. And it was a frequent haunt of yours, as mm-hmm. well as many other musicians, especially when you were kind of coming out like of Webster Hall or where yeah. it was right nearby.
Mm-hmm.
I love that you wrote about it. Now, they opened up a new place, though, didn't they?
So Johnny T and his brother Chris, Yerington, they have a couple of bars.
Yeah,
they've got Niagara. They have the Bowery Electric. They had Black and White was their first bar though, and when they came to New York, they were like, "This is their place," and it was their longest running bar, and it was this casual, cool place. But yeah, there's a new bar down on Orchard and Canal called Treasure Club.
Treasure Club, right?
And Johnny's like, he'll hate me talking about him because he's not, you know, he's quite a kind of rock and roll kind of, how dare you talk, you know, he's modest. He shouldn't be. I call him the art doula. He helps people. He helps artists. And it's not just a money thing or you know, here's the stage for the night, or don't worry about this, you can pay me later, or whatever. It's not just keeping bands and artists alive. With his bars and with his sort of attitude to life, there are these key people in cities all over the place, all over the world, who are the quiet alternators. If it was a car, you know, it's like the thing that without it, you really need these things in the machine to make the whole thing kind of run. Like, for instance, in Black and White, the artist Richard Hambleton, one of the original graffiti artists.
And he's mentioned in the song.
And he's mentioned, he's mentioned in the song in the second verse. And he made these shadow paintings, and you'd see them all around downtown New York City, people in doorways, black shadows, very iconic. He was a great artist. And Johnny, when Richard was down on his luck, gave him the kitchen at the back of Black and White for a studio. And this kitchen is like this, you couldn't swing a cat in it, but every night Richard would come in and paint and then go home in his little bike. He had a little tricycle, and he's such a character, and that's the kind of guy Johnny is. And he loves art and music. He's a musician himself. And anyway, this bar, Black and White, was that type of place where everyone went and gathered. They had poetry. It was for local. It wasn't just for rock and rollers, you know. It was for everyone. Everyone went there.
Yeah. I love that you got Chris Martin and Brandon Flowers of Killers to be your backing vocalist on that.
Yeah.
I thought that was just marvelous. And they live there. You're neighbors, and you've actually been touring with Killers.
Been touring with Brandon and the boys.
And Chris Martin probably wouldn't have Coldplay had it not been for Travis.
So. No. He says very politely, we have, you know, like, oh, you know, Travis. Chris is like on this other.
Still, though, it must feel nice to be recognized by your peers. You know, your first two albums actually broke. Mm-hmm. You did influence a lot of musicians.
We're all in one big band. There's no separate bands. It's like you need to think of all music as, and I'm talking about all music, like we're in the same band. And when you come to see a band live, you're in the band that night as well. And that's why gigs are so incredibly Moorish. You're like, oh, you know, when you get a good gig, when you go and see a band that play well, you feel like you're in the band, and you are. That's the way it is. That's the way it should be.
What you just said is why I love Travis and why I've always admired you, Fran Healy. That's a beautiful way of looking at it, that we're all in the band.
Yeah.
Everybody, every band is sort of tied to the next band.
Yeah.
You also did a documentary I wanted to ask you about very briefly.
Oh, great.
Called Almost Fashionable.
That's us.
Which was hilarious in that you invited a music critic who was not necessarily a Travis fan to come along with you to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of wondering, you obviously have done that documentary, which was fantastic. You are also a superb storyteller. Have you ever contemplated not just doing a documentary, but actually writing something more substantive, a memoir, or even delving into fiction or some other kind of literature?
I don't really like fiction so much. I think most fiction is based on fact.
Right.
Most of the best stories are real, and they just like spin them into, you know.
Would you write a memoir?
Yes. It's not a memoir though. I'm fascinated by songwriting because I think it's, we've got into where it goes. There's a documentary of a guy that goes around all the dementia, Alzheimer's patients, because he did it to his grandmother, puts the headphones on, and people who are catatonic come to life, literally, and start chatting like they're alive again. And because they're playing songs like by, you know, the Glenn Miller band or something down their headphones, and something about where music goes to in your brain. I don't believe there's anything that, I get really, I talk a lot in pictures, and please, I must apologize for that because it does get a bit annoying for my band. They're like, oh God, here's another, they call them phrenologies.
Phrenologies.
Because I can't quite just tell you the way it is. But I was thinking about how, right, you're like, I was like, God, I don't get ballet, right? I just don't get it. I'm like, I get movies, right? I get, but it's an art form that I don't get. I need to go and try and look at it more and get it. And but these art forms come into us. And I'll take, for instance, music's like water. Being like, water goes into every crack, everywhere. There's nothing that, you know, if you pour sand into something, it only goes so far. Then you could pour rocks in and it kind of goes a little bit, and boulders, and there's different art forms that go deeper and deeper and deeper. And music, there's nothing that goes deeper than music. There's nothing that, and we don't know where, we don't fully know the magic of it. And I don't know if I want to know that, but I'd love to talk about, to write something that helps people, because people think it's really hard to write a song. It's not. It's really not. Everybody can write a song. You just have to be a bit patient. And I'd love to write a song that sort of knocks down a few of these walls and allows people to... I met Amy Wodge, you know, the songwriter Amy Wodge. She wrote that big, massive juggernaut of a song with Ed Sheeran. And she was a down and out, not down and out, but, you know, down on her luck songwriter. And she was like... she told me this when we met, and she said that when Travis won their Brit Award, I went up on stage with the band, thanks from a Brit, Lou Reed, or whatever, who, I think it was Lou that gave us it, and I held the thing up, and I didn't know what I was going to say, and I said, if you're sitting in your bedroom right now with your guitar on your knee and you're about to give up, don't, because it's just keep doing it, have patience, and blah 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 blah. And she watched that, and she was about to give up doing what she did, and she, that message got to her, and she continued to do it. So I, in a way, I think I would like to maybe make something that reaches especially poorer kids that don't have access, because, you know, there's a certain confidence that having this, you know, parents with disposable income, a little bit more disposable income than a poor family does. But I think how many great writers and how many great musicians have we not had because they just didn't have enough money or, the
you
right...
You came from that kind of background.
Yeah.
It was really hard for you.
Well, yeah. Totally. Yeah. It's not even that it's hard because it's just normal.
Yeah.
But it's hard. You don't realize just having... Again, here I go again. I was talking to a friend the other day. It's like everyone's in this big restaurant and everyone's we're all in the big restaurant together. But if you look at people's menus, working class people have nothing, barely nothing on their menu. And then you look at the kid over there or the family over there, they've got university and art school. Like, I didn't even know university existed when I was a little kid. When I was at secondary school, it was only when I was exposed, when we moved to another part of Glasgow that was a bit more, not affluent, but aspirational, that I got exposed to kids who went to uni. And I'm like, what's uni? What's art school? You know, I didn't know that. And so if I had to do anything, if I was going to write anything, it would be to probably to break down these walls to make people realize, you can write a song. It's not hard. And there's ways to do it. There's techniques. There's little, things. It's like
I want you to write
midwifery.
Yeah, midwifery. Yeah, I would like you to write that book, Fran Healy. I'm Cara Manning with FUV Live Sessions. My guest today is Fran Healy of Travis. Their new album is LA Times, and there is so much. Fran, I just realized that I just want to talk to you pretty much all afternoon. And we don't have that time. There's so much that I am not going to be able to get to, but I was intrigued that you one of the songs that you wanted to do today was Sing, which is from 2001's The Invisible Band. But I also thought of the first two lines of Sing, which seem to parallel exactly the sentiments on LA Times. And I'm wondering where you see that connection with, it's interesting. I was wondering how often you listen to your older albums and then think, oh, well, this still makes sense to me. And there are other songs you're like, I don't even recognize who wrote that anymore.
Oh, no, I never have that.
You never have that.
Never
you always recognize
that.
Part
yeah,
of
yourself. Cause they're all,
it's... Yeah. Yeah. And where would Sing fall in that?
When you sing and you write songs, all you're doing is moaning in tune and rhythm.
Moaning in tune?
When you hear dogs howling,
there's
this really funny thing I saw the other week on the internet of a dog playing the piano and going, nah, rah, 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 rah. That's all it is. And it's just finely tuned, right? And you're making these tonal noises. I saw a woman in Glasgow once stand in the middle of a room, and my friend's mother, Madeline, was like, "Away up, Janie, and do your song." She was Irish. That's me doing an Irish accent. "Way up and do your thing." And Janie's all like, "Oh, no, no." And the lights were on. It was the end of a big party they were having at their house. And everybody, old, young, it was an amazing, they're a great family. This old woman gets up. And I remember she puts her hands, she clasps her hands beside her navel, and she's maybe 76 or so. She's in her late 70s, and she starts singing in Gaelic. Nobody knew what the hell she was singing about. And at the end of it, I'm looking around and everyone was crying. Like, what the hell? How does that, And so to me, the song, every Travis song is coming out of me. It's just like you're fracking your soul. At the beginning of your career as a songwriter, you're picking up the pieces of gold lying on the surface, and then later on you're digging. You're digging a little bit deeper and to try and find a little bit more. When you've been doing it for a long, long time, it kind of feels like you're fracking. You're just like, and out still comes this stuff. But all it is just this. It's me like crying for my mum, or crying for like, why did you leave me, or dad, or saying something. It's the four-year-old you who didn't have a voice, who didn't have and it'll you can fashion it into any kind of shape you like, but when you break it all down, we all have that person inside of us, inside the Russian dolls that make us who we are. And I think when you hear or see any kind of music or art, and it makes you shudder. It's making one of those layers shudder, and you don't need to know which layer. But I definitely think music's coming from, you know, that younger time in your life. You're exercising this thing, you're getting out of it. I've never heard a good song come from anyone who's had a really comfortable childhood, ever. You sharpen your chisel with the pain that you, or the whatever you go through in your life. But then again, I don't know anyone that's not had a hard time, because it's hard. Life is tough, no matter where you are.
And it's why when we see Travis in concert and you do a song like Sing, we all sing with you.
Yeah.
Because we are also sort of able to be part of the band in that moment.
Exactly.
And to moan along with you.
Yeah, can't have a good moan.
Fran Haley, what an absolute delight to talk to you today. You are a very special human being, and this album, LA Times, is stunning and beautiful and surprising, and I'm really excited for you. For I hope you have a kinder 5 years ahead.
Thanks very much. It's really lovely to be here, and yeah, I think I definitely feel that you know, you see the little kind of area of blue sky, I'm sailing toward it, and it's eastward, so you might see me, you know,
and the gust of wind is gentle.
Yeah.
Thank you, Fran. This is Sing on FUV Live Sessions.
Seems to be going right. So low, why'd you have it so low? You're so, you've been waiting in the sun too long. If you sing, 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 sing for the love you bring. Shoulder, hold her, tell her everything's gonna be fine. Surely, you've been going too early. Hurry, 'cause no one's gonna be stopped. Nah, 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 nah. But if you sing, sing. You bring won't mean a thing. As you sing, 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 sing. Baby,
That was Fran Healy of the band Travis performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thanks to Fran for joining us in the studio and to BMG Records. Thanks to our FUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara and Aaron Merriman. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Catherine Sherman and Ina Volovich. Megan Oftermatt is our executive producer, and our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and maybe find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer of this episode with Fran Healy, Kara Manning.